From A Path for Warriors by Margaret Wheatley. We are grateful to discover our right work and happy to be engaged in it. We embody values and practices that offer us meaningful lives now. We let go of needing to impact the future. We refrain from adding to aggression, fear, and confusion of the times. We welcome every opportunity to practice our skills of compassion and insight, even very challenging ones. We resist seeking the illusory comfort and certainty and stability. We delight when our work achieves good results, yet let go of needing others to adopt our successes. We know that all problems have complex causes. We do not place blame on any one person or cause, including ourselves and our colleagues. We're vigilant with our relationships, mindful to counteract the polarizing dynamic of the times. Our actions embody our confidence that humans can get through anything as long as we're together. We stay present to the world as it is with open minds and hearts, knowing this nourishes and our gentleness, decency, and bravery. We care for ourselves as tenderly as we care for others, taking time for rest, reflection, and renewal. We are richly blessed with moments of delight, humor, grace, and joy. We are grateful for these.
The opening lines of a poem entitled Flying Crooked by Robert Graves. The butterfly, a cabbage white, his honest idiocy of flight will never know it is too late, master the art of flying straight. Yet has, who knows so well as I, a just sense of how not to fly. Once upon a time, on another Thanksgiving Day, this was in 1959, my world came apart amidst the honest idiocy of flight. My dad gathered our family shortly after dinner. I think it was at halftime of the Longhorns-Aggies game. And he brought us the news. He had just received a dream of a job offer. He would soon be among the founding faculty members at Florida Presbyterian College, very far away. Dad's enthusiasm was tempered in knowing the implications for the rest of us in the family. What might it be like to uproot from our home in Northeast Texas and begin our lives anew in Florida? I lay awake many nights in fear and trembling. How would I come to terms with losing my familiar landscapes and friends? And after many dinner time conversations in the weeks, actually in the months ahead, and pondering the consequences of the move upon all of us in the family, my dad presented me with three options. Number one, I could move to Florida with the family, transfer to a new high school to finish my senior year, and then apply to some colleges. That was option one. Number two, I could move with the family to Florida, but skip my senior year of high school, and I could be among the founding class of freshmen at Dad's new college, a distinguished honor. Option three, I could remain in Northeast Texas to finish my senior year of high school, and Dad would arrange for a place for me to live apart from our family. Well, on that, on all of those days, especially the day of Dad's initial announcement, doorways opened to futures previously unimagined for our little family in a backwater town in Texas. How would we come to terms with change and with loss? Last week, we began conversations on the dance of change and suggested two key ideas. This was last Sunday for those not here. Idea number one, it's not change that people resist, it's loss. It's loss and coming to terms with it. And idea number two, in every living system, successful adaptations are both conservative and progressive. Adapting systems preserve the DNA that is essential for the species or system's continual survival, and at the same time, they discard and rearrange the DNA which no longer allows the system to flourish in new and more challenging environments. That was last week. Today, we'll continue those conversations, and I thank Christina so much for suggesting after last Sunday some wise insights about flying crooked amidst the dance of change. And thanks for participating today, Christina. I want to offer four key ideas that I have found helpful as my own pacemakers. I make no presumptions whether any may apply to you, but these have repeatedly served me well, and I'll offer the punchline up front. Don't have to wait. Easy to state, very difficult to live by. It is our ways of functioning amidst chaos, lurching here and there like that butterfly, sometimes flying crooked. That matters far more than the facts of the situation. Our emotional maturity, that is, staying connected, asking right questions, and leading by empowering others, promotes the adaptive agility of the whole system. So, some big ideas today about adaptive agility. Big idea number one, create balcony space. When your world comes undone, for instance, hearing that the family home is going to be put on the market, when your world comes undone, declare a little timeout and find some balcony space, a vantage point from which to observe the changing landscapes, including those beyond familiar comfort zones. And from this balcony space, observe yourself down there in active space. Observe yourself jostling among the others while the music's playing, and ask yourself, who else may be involved? It's off stage. Those not even in the script. And nonetheless, they're influencing what's going on. And resist the urge to isolate or try to fix one little part of what you see down there in active space. And from balcony space, set aside for just a few moments your special knowledge of your true intentions and feelings, but instead notice how others might also be observing activity space if they were also with you in balcony space. So put aside your special knowledge of what you really are thinking, but imagine others standing with you on the balcony. Notice who is saying what, to whom, and what the body language is, and how attention is shifting. And this is an iterative process, moving back and forth from balcony space to activity space and back again. Okay, that's big idea number one. Create balcony space. Go there from time to time. Big idea two, from the balcony, distinguish between technical problems and adaptive challenges. This is the key idea of interim work, believe me. Let's have a look at some slides. Okay, let's see if we can back up one. Yeah, perfect. Let's look at this baby. Ron Heifetz and his colleagues at the Kennedy School of Government present a model for discernment during times of things coming undone. They distinguish between technical problems and adaptive challenges. And in the top row, we can dim the lights as you need to so that people can see those colors. In the top row are technical problems. In the bottom row are fully adaptive challenges. And the row in between represents situations that have both technical and adaptive dimensions. So what are the key distinctions? Let's look at the next one. Great. In technical situations, the top row, the problem is well defined, the solution is easily identified, and problem solvers usually have experience, credentials, and a handy toolkit. Example, the microphone needs adjusting, the tires on my car need replacing, I dislocated a finger while practicing tennis or some such. In such technical situations, somebody with expertise can get her done with an appropriate remedy. Let's look at the next one. Good. In intermediate situations, which Heifetz calls technical and adaptive, the problem is clear, but solutions are not straightforward. And this is because the many diverse stakeholders in the system will need to experiment with new ways of getting along. And in such situations, those who are most appropriate to experiment with and implement solutions include not just outside resources and consultants and downloadable fixes, but they include the stakeholders. The ball's in their court. Now let's go to fully adaptive challenges. Bingo. In these situations, neither the problem nor the solutions are clear. And this is because a lot of experimental learning is required of the stakeholders in order to test and rearrange some of the system's DNA. In fully adaptive challenges, the locus of responsibility to move into an experimental mindset. Let me say that again. The locus of responsibility to move into an experimental mindset. That responsibility is not from outside. That responsibility rests with the stakeholders and their willingness to be experimenters. There is no outside authority that can motivate or direct such an experimental mindset. Recall my example of a fully adaptive challenge. Dad's announcement that the house was going to be sold during a Longhorns-Aggies game on a Thanksgiving day long ago. 1,500 miles of a move, a fully adaptive challenge at a deeply emotional level, and it's a challenge that would continue for years, long after the technical move had happened. Yes, there was a technical move. The adaptive challenges continued for years. Don't misread technical work for adaptive work. You know, in hindsight, this is a confession. My most egregious mistakes as a minister, parent, spouse, in every situation, my most egregious mistakes have been amidst radically adaptive challenges wherein I and others had to experiment with new ways of getting along. We had to do this, but instead of fostering a learning environment, I rushed in amidst my own anxiety to do something and offered a quick fix. At the time, it probably did seem helpful, and yet it distracted me and others from engaging in the more difficult adaptive work. Leave that for a minute. You know, I sense that this is just a common misunderstanding by ministers and lay leaders in every congregation, especially after we have received piles of phone messages and emails saying, when are you going to do something about, and then fill in the blank. And too often I jump in with a technical fix. Now here's a hint. In church life, these quick fixes are what we might call the three P's. change people, write a policy, start a new program. Fine. Now, I am not suggesting that there is a need to always review personnel practices and policies and programs and so forth. And yet, in the anxiety of the moment, adaptive challenges that require new ways of getting along can be misread as amenable to a quick fix. The stories I could tell on myself. Come on, Johnson, slow it down. Get on the balcony. Okay, big idea number three. Be alert for the PZD, productive zone of disequilibrium. Let me explain. Let's have a look at the next one. Good. Okay. We got lots of time to unpack this baby. Actually, this is the meaning of life. Post this on your refrigerator. You think I'm kidding? Let me explain. This is the meaning of life because both technical and adaptive challenges are on this baby. One, when technical problems are addressed, that's the red line. And when adaptive challenges are engaged, that's the yellow. Beep, 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 beep. They're both on here. Let's look. First, technical situations, the red line. Example, you break your leg skiing. At that moment, disequilibrium peaks, the red line. You're lying in the snow, freezing and in pain. People are skiing right past you. The folks from the ski patrol come by with a stretcher, a blanket, sympathy, maybe a shot of whiskey if you want that. And disequilibrium fairly quickly drops. Now, it may bump up and down again, maybe while you're waiting in the emergency room, or maybe as you are enduring weeks or months of rehab. But overall, the disequilibrium on the red line decreases, finally disappearing once you're healed. Adaptive challenges, the yellow curve, very different. At the beginning, disequilibrium's very low. Why is this? Maybe you have suspected there's an adaptive challenge, but others either don't see it or don't want to deal with it. Why not? Disequilibrium's low. But the goal is to raise the heat to a point where thoughtful engagement can happen. Raise the heat to a zone within which thoughtful engagement can happen. And that's the PZD, productive zone. The key word is productive. Disequilibrium is productive if it is above a threshold of creative change, and yet you have not exceeded the system's tolerance limit. And here is what is so fascinating about systems. Every system, every church has many PZDs. It may be this for the caring team, this for the finance team, this for the membership team. And it gets even more interesting. They change. What an opportunity. Multiple PZDs that are moving. It requires alertness. And yet, sensitivity to this productive region. And so, as time goes on, the disequilibrium may rise and fall as one stays within this zone, maybe a sigmoidal or sinusoidal pattern. And so those in leadership roles will have to anticipate tactics that some folks may prefer to keep the heat down at comfortable levels. And this is called work avoidance, the stories I could tell. Work avoidance takes so many forms, such as creating a new committee with no authority or arguing fine points of numbers. There are so many rich ways of getting out of of getting it down to a less stressful level. And yet, you know, doing this creative work is energizing. It really is once you get in that zone, because as ideas emerge, so too will tangential thinking, moving outside the box, going out of orbit, if you will. Yeah. Because once the energy of a system is welcoming adaptive challenges, no one can predict the outcomes. What a bonus! You can't predict, explain, or control the outcomes. In the words of Margaret Wheatley, it is impossible to direct a living system. You can only perturb it. And this is because every living system contains its own solutions. Perhaps a suitable reminder for every parent of a teenager, maybe an epitaph for every interim minister. Every system contains its own solutions. It just needs time in the PZD to experiment. Welcome that time. This is encouraging the system to create from its own resources. And so that's big idea number three. Be alert and welcome this productive zone. Big idea number four, celebrate successes, encourage the heart. Ask the question, do I want to function mostly as a quality control inspector? Find what's not working and fix it? Of course, there are places for such. Thank goodness that happens on assembly lines. Yeah. In my experience, but here, this is a thought experiment for you. In my experience, most of congregational work is radically adaptive. And this is just in hindsight, because it's an invitation to experiment with new ways of getting along. It's hard to script or put on a timeline. And I am convinced that rather than being quality control inspectors, if we can, to the extent possible, be encouragers, it may promote the growth of agility in the system. You may recall a Sunday service this past August when I mentioned John Maxwell's 30-second rule. In case you forgot, here it is. Anytime you meet somebody, whether it's a total stranger at the Meijer checkout line or the spouse you've been with for 50 years, within the first 30 seconds, say something encouraging. I didn't say correct. I didn't say provocative. I say encouraging. Encourage the heart. Speak to the heart. Let them know that you value who they are. For instance, thank you for staying up last night and reading to the kids from their favorite stories. I was too exhausted to give it attention. You are making a difference to them. Wow, this is an intriguing menu of lunchtime items at the bazaar. It's fascinating. I don't remember all these from last year. Tell me what you would recommend today. This is it. Within just 30 seconds, let others know the difference they make. Can you imagine the difference if at every gathering of this church, every board meeting, every committee meeting, time were taken during check-in for encouragement? Would that cut into the work of the group? Would that be irrelevant? Encourage the heart. My friends, amidst complex changes, it is how we walk together that matters. Will we bless or curse, try to fix or dance with more agility? Yep. Yes, we all bring our carry-on baggage, spelled both ways, and our projections and regrets. But what matters is the spirit of encouragement. May it be so. I've asked Christina to read an epilogue for us.
Everything Has a Deep Dream by Rachel Naomi Raymond. I've spent many years learning how to fix life, only to discover at the end of the day that life is not broken. There's a hidden seed of greater wholeness in everyone and everything. We serve life best when we water it and befriend it, when we listen before we act. In befriending life, we do not make things happen according to our own design. We uncover something that's already happening in us and around us and create conditions that enable that. Everything is moving toward its place of wholeness, always struggling against the odds. Everything has a deep dream of itself and its fulfillment.